Sustainability for me just makes better business sense. There's an economic sort of argument for it, but for me, it's an efficient way to operate and it just makes better sense.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. And for this guest, I have to say a big thank you to Adam Bastock from Small 99, who suggested I should get in touch and get Gregor on the show. And brilliant guest, brilliant recommendation. Thank you very, very, very much, Adam from Small 99. Okay, just before we meet the lovely guest that Adam recommended, I want to take a moment to speak to the supplier side people who are tuning in. If you're SaaS, if you're an agency, this one's for you. We are a show funded by our sponsors. They really do make all that we do here possible. So I'm going to take a second or two to speak directly to those of you who might be interested in sponsoring. Sponsorship for the second half of 2024 is available now. Well, most of it's available. Some of it has already sold. But 2024, even second half, available now. If you want to get your message in front of our lovely listeners in 2024, then now is the time to get in touch with me via LinkedIn or ecmp.info/sponsor. I look forward to chatting to you. Okay, back to the main event. Let's talk about our guest. In this episode, we're talking about food and beverages. We don't often get into this sector, but it's really nice when we do. We're talking to an amazing brand of soda who started off wholesaling exclusively in kind of the events space and the restaurant space, and who over the pandemic started going D2C, who are now building both those sales channels, who have some phenomenal kind of values that they're sitting by. And we'll be talking about those. We'll be talking about why they decided to build their own factory to create their products, what it is that goes into creating those products. Plus, we'll be talking some key marketing tips, some other strategies for film, and all sorts of things are coming up in this one. Super inspiring guest. So make sure you listen right to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on his top tips as well and my own take on this episode. Shopify recently turned the tables on me and took me from interviewer to interviewee. Knowing as they do that the most successful retailers today are those that bridge the gap between online and offline and make it a seamless experience, Shopify wanted my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, particularly in the key areas of local selling, omnichannel selling, and cross-border selling. You can read my thoughts along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting ecmp.info/Shopify and downloading the report. That's ecmp.info/Shopify. And now to introduce our special guest. Gregor Lecky is the founder and managing director of Rapscallion Soda. Founded in 2018, they've shipped over 750,000 cans, selling via their D2C Shopify store and B2B Shopify trade site. They're now doing over 1,000 orders a month. Hello, Gregor.
Hi, Chloe. How are you doing? Thanks very much for having me.
Brilliant to have you on. How did you end up in the wonderful world of e-commerce?
I think it was that dreaded pandemic that did it for us. Yeah, we started the business in my kitchen sink actually a few years before 2018. And then before you know it, we were just growing week on week with new customers.
And those were trade customers at the beginning then?
Yeah, so pretty much 100% wholesale, albeit, you know, I was much more like a sort of milkman. You know, when I deliver our cans or fresh fruit soft drinks on a Friday, you'd end up just picking a lot more orders, which would then take me to the fruit market on a Monday, and you just follow that sort of cycle. So yeah, it was really in sort of 2020, we had a Squarespace website that was just ticking along. I mean, literally nothing sexy whatsoever. But yeah, when we lost all of our wholesale customers and literally we all just went into lockdown, I mean, I couldn't sleep anyway. So I thought, why not just switch the whole business to a digital model? And then, yeah, we enjoyed sort of electric growth after that point. And now we're just sort of I guess piecing it all back together now that I think things are feeling a lot more normal, you know, so wholesale's back and much more steady. We've still got a really strong sort of direct to business channel through our new e-commerce platform, so a dedicated trade portal. And yeah, balancing all sort of three channels on two websites has been what's been keeping me up for the last 2 weeks.
Well, I'm sure we'll get into some of that a little later on. First off, though, let's tell everyone a little bit more about the business. Tell us about your product. What is Rapscallion Soda?
So we're quite unusual in the sense that we're a fresh fruit soft drink manufacturer. And what that really means is we specialize in sort of raw ingredient fizzy drinks. We do use a little bit of raw organic cane sugar, but we have a core range, which are sort of premium class one imported ingredients. We cold press almost everything. We macerate. We use a lot of techniques that I learned from working in winemaking and brewing in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah, it's just about putting that sort of care, attention, and technique into quite complex, I would say sophisticated drinks, but we are quite playful in how we market ourselves. Yeah, and the other side of the business is sort of hyper-seasonal drinks. So we work directly with farmers. This will be the first year that we're working with a lot of growers across the UK, not just Scottish growers. That sort of almost single origin approach, I think, is really what's put us on the map in terms of dealing with some Michelin star restaurants, really cool high-end hotels. And yeah, a lot of cafes, a lot of delis. So in a nutshell, yeah, it's fresh fruit, soft drinks, raw ingredients, real flavor.
Got you. And that your wholesale strategy, your selling to people who sell on to the consumer strategy, isn't one of trying to get into the big old supermarkets. It's one of going to, is it events and restaurants and cafes? It's more of the hospitality side of things than the big box retailers.
Yeah, 100%. If you're doing business in Europe, I guess they sort of classify it as HoReCa. For my background, I sort of call it the on-trade or food service. Yeah, for us, we sort of predominantly deal with a lot of independents, but actually just in the last sort of 6 to 9 months, we're just starting to work with bigger and bigger hotel groups, which is really, really exciting. To answer your sort of previous touch point, I'd never say no to retail, but because we pay top dollar for our premium produce. And I'll be honest, because we've sort of grown year on year from kitchen sink production to small commercial scale, and now just only really gone live with our brand spanking new facility for what it was 12 months ago, we were still a building site. So it's only really now that we're actually looking back at export and really dealing with some of the bigger guys, getting all this accreditation certificates and everything, you know. I think from the face of it, if you're actually not in food and drink, there's so many big brands that have sort of got huge budgets and they go through the whole process by going through a co-packer. For us, because we actually had such an unusual approach to making soft drinks, I had to create my own facility processes to actually get it to commercial scale. So it's been a learning curve, but yeah, we do deal with some fantastic venues all across the UK. We just got into Dublin and I just came back from Dubai about 3 weeks ago. Anyone who's thirsty, anyone who just sort of needs a bit more of a sort of adult soft drink, as we sort of tend to call it, I'm all ears.
Excellent. And you mentioned the production facility. So you're doing everything from raw fruit through to canned drink, basically.
Yeah, 100%. I guess we've all become quite familiar with sort of nose-to-tail dining. When I was working in the wine industry, you know, I left Scotland age sort of 21 and started studying wine, worked on vineyards, worked in wineries. I became quite smitten with the idea and that sort of craft of what you could grow and then how you could change that into a product and actually where you could sort of taste where it came from. A fruit to can ethos is what we're sort of known for now. When we say fruit to can, we really mean pallets of fresh fruit arrive to us at say 7-8 in the morning on a Monday. And it's a can of fresh fizzy drink by say a Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening. And it's usually getting shipped either to our fulfillment partners or direct to consumer by that Thursday and arriving to them at the weekend. So yeah, as fresh as we can make it.
Nice. And given you've got that quite heavy investment in plant and machinery and all the rest of it. I'm guessing you've also got quite a sizable team. So who's on the team? What are you choosing to outsource and how do you divvy up the tasks?
I'm still wearing too many hats, as I'm sure a lot of other founders here can sort of attest to. But actually, yeah, we're actually quite small in terms of management. So we're very operationally focused. My partner came into the business, you know, in 2021. She actually comes from a property and luxury travel background, but she heads up her sort of customer experience. But she is, you know, that sort of primary point of contact, whether you're a wholesaler, a premium hotel, or actually an at-home customer. We've got a head of production, head of liquids. We've always got a seasonal sort of production team that we bolt on. Tried a couple of digital advertising agencies, never really found one that does a fantastic job for us and our premium price point, but we're always on the hunt. We have a sort of in-house, semi-in-house videographer, and we'll really start rolling out this sort of new digital strategy this year, which will be exciting. We just sort of fluffed it a bit last year and just had a bit of fun with it. But yeah, I actually need to structure it out and do it properly this year. We also lean on sort of, you know, a lot of photographers and a lot of other creative sort of people. But I lean quite heavily on some of our oldest customers. You know, ultimately, they're the advocates out there. I got away with, you know, a marketing budget that was a stencil and a can of spray paint for the first sort of 18 months of the business. But yeah, it's always evolving.
Excellent. Oh, where to go? You've taught us so much already, Gregor. Where do I take us next?
Sorry.
Now, no, nothing to apologize. This is really, really good. One of the things which is kind of dripping through what you're telling us, but we haven't really got properly into yet, is that sustainability is a hugely important part of your business. In terms of the, I guess, the vision, the mission, the product, how you've built the new facility. So tell us a bit about why you wanted to take that angle in the beginning and then what it kind of means to your business.
I always talk about sort of designing out waste. And actually, I don't know whether it's a sort of Scottish or a UK thing, but there is that sort of tall poppy syndrome that I'm always very conscious of. So when we touch on sustainability, I'm actually always a bit nervous to really get into the nitty-gritty of it. But yeah, I mean, by design, Rapscallion should be super, super simple. You know, ultimately, we wanted to have a playful conversation around a serious subject. We wanted to have a direct relationship with our growers and our suppliers and our end consumers. And sustainability for me just makes better business sense. There's an economic sort of argument for it, but for me, it's an efficient way to operate and it just makes better sense. You know, the other side of it is I've always said Rapscallion wants to be here for a long time, not just a good time. I'm not interested in buying up carbon credits. I think that's a lazy way of doing it. Again, I don't want to bash the people that are trying to do real good, but I mean, the facility that we went live with, for example, is that I had a commercial problem ultimately of how do I process this amount of fruit or how do I work with as many growers as possible when the sun shines in the UK for a very short amount of time? You know, so 3 months of the year, I'm pretty much sleeping in the office and we're driving up as far north as Arbroath, Blairgowrie. You know, we'll probably get down to Yorkshire in a couple of weeks for the rhubarb season. Back to the facility, we needed a facility that was hyper efficient and ultimately allowed us to compete with these guys who can rely on artificial ingredients, concentrates, or just producing at such scale that they can always have economies of scale. The facility that we went live with, for example, is by design very, very different. So we're electrically driven. Our supplier is 100% renewable. So, you know, that's everything from light switches to boiling the kettle. We also use two forms of direct air capture, which is quite unusual. So we actually produce our own food grade nitrogen on site. Fancy little bit of kit that I kind of stumbled across from the brewing industry. And again, the significance of that is that it actually allows us to refuse the use of preservatives in our drinks because it effectively blankets our fresh fruit products. Also gives them a sort of slightly creamy mouthfeel, which I think is next level cool as well. But even the carbon dioxide that I use. So again, for us, it's not just about sort of talking about emissions. for us, it was really looking at and analyzing what are the inputs that we have as a manufacturer, as standard, and then what do those outputs look like? And then it was just trying to find that balance before we actually draw a line in the sand and say we're going for, say, carbon net zero, even though I am sort of quietly. There was a lot that I saw had to be done in an industry that is actually, there's not a lot of transparency in the world of soft drinks, you know? The guys who actually invented it, you know, in the late 1700s are still the biggest players in it. So for me, you know, I had to teach myself how to actually produce a raw product in a safe manner. But I've also, in the last 18 months, had to make sure that we can make it as quick and as efficiently as these guys who do have shelf-stable sort of base ingredients and huge, huge facilities. So yeah, does that sort of answer it?
It definitely does. And it's clear that it's super important to you and you put an awful lot of energy, time, thought and money into achieving this. Is it having a positive impact on sales? Do you find that the wholesale customers, the end customers, are they coming to you in greater numbers and wanting to pay a higher price point because they understand that that sits behind the brand? Or is it still for them, it's just, well, this tastes better than anything else?
Yeah, great question. I think the more that we've actually dug into the data on this, Chloe, the more that we found that I think our end users at home buy us because of the quality. And I think, you know, because we're very transparent, whether you look at the peel and reveal labels that sort of put us on the design stage sort of 3 years ago, telling that story and actually telling the farmer's story, talking about how we make it and how it tastes that way, that is important to these guys. But I was surprised to hear that actually maybe they've had sustainability rammed down their throats for a few too many years. And I think a lot of these guys have maybe got bigger fish to fry, you know, with the energy crisis or impending World War III. You know, there's been some pretty big things that have happened over the last few years. But in direct contrast to that, actually, a lot of the premium restaurants and wholesalers, the middlemen that we deal with, that does seem to be the sort of, maybe the icing on the cake. It might not be the core reason why they purchase us. But I think one thing that I might just need to bite the bullet and do is maybe just actually go for one of these B Corp accreditation schemes. We're definitely going for Salsa. I've always sort of treaded carefully in that realm, as we touched on before. There's a lot of companies out there that say they're doing a lot of good, but if you read their impact reports, to me, it seems like a lot of hot air.
I think one of the problems we have is that the word sustainability means very little. Like you say net carbon zero, that's pretty solid what that actually means. But if you say sustainability, it could be so many different things. It's so overused that it's, I must admit, I sometimes go, oh, should I be using that term? But it's the one everybody uses. So it's such a difficult term. And I think actually it doesn't really matter if you're using that term or using another term, if you're doing the things that are right, which clearly in your business, you know, you're heading in that really good direction with talking about it all. But it's, the word sustainability is almost as meaningless as the word e-commerce. It means so many different things to so many different people. It's a tricky one.
Back to your initial point again, you know, I think maybe what we've noticed is that as a business, we tend to wear our heart on our sleeves. And I think because we are still ultimately a very lean operation, even though we've always gone through sort of huge periods of growth, I think our customers always sort of resonate with that. So yes, I mean, I'm the first to put my hand up and say, we don't always get everything right. And I'm by no means an expert on, say, nutrition or sustainability or whatever it may be. But we do always try and dig into the issues and just try and just show that to the customers and just say, you know, we're working on this, this, and this. Starting an open narrative, I think, is really important with all of our end customers. I think the response on that has been fantastic. You know, marketeers will talk about authenticity, but you can't buy it. At least I don't think so.
No, you can't. And you very quickly get found out if you try to fake it. There's one other element of the business I wanted to chat with you about, Gregor, which you mentioned kind of in passing earlier, which is the seasonal ranges, which are almost kind of fit into that kind of limited edition offer. And there's some amazing testimonials on the site. People go, I wait every year for this particular flavor to come in.
Yeah.
I mean, did you happen upon the marketing joy that is a limited edition and a seasonal range by accident, because it's clearly part of the ethos of the right product at the right time? Or has it been something you were keen to include from day one?
Great question, Chloe. You're really dropping bombs on me tonight. It all really started from actually a conversation with the growers themselves. So if you watch any of our video content, I mean, we haven't really done much long form content on YouTube, but there are little snippets of when we're up actually speaking to these batshit crazy farmers. A lot of it was, yeah, having that open narrative with them, asking, how are you getting on? What does your supply chain look like? And how could we slot into it and actually add some value to you guys? So yes, don't get me wrong, having a bit of scarcity in our marketing always sort of helps. Having that immediacy sort of lever whenever we're doing drops or emails, you know, you look at fashion industries, they use it very, very well. There's definitely two sides of it. I think we'll always have a seasonal aspect to the business, but actually the pressure that I'm feeling right now is that the bigger and bigger customers that we get is actually that scarcity sort of scares them off in some regards. But the end consumers absolutely love it. You know, I think ultimately, yeah, for me, it comes down to taste. I mean, if you have even something that's been frozen or, you know, flown in from afar and inoculated and then sort of ripened in the UK, I mean, you can smell, you can taste the difference. You know, I always say with our soft drinks is that, you know, we're there to sort of massage the flavor out of the fruit. We're not there to adulterate the flavor in any means, but I can't also make incredible flavor off really poor produce. When I realized that there was almost an identity crisis in Scotland a couple of years back, or at least I've been back home for about, what, 9-10 years now? Really enjoyed living in the Southern Hemisphere. But to me, no one was really making a song and dance about Scottish produce. You know, Scotland's well known for sort of venison, very well known for whiskey, of course. But we've got some of the best berries, you know, hand on heart, I'll say that, in the world. I think it's because actually we don't get a lot of sunshine. It is a bit chillier and they've got a long time to grow. When I came back to Scotland, I think there was this pride around, you know, Iron Brew and deep fried Mars bars. And Scotland to me was a lot more about young creative people doing really cool things. I mean, the amount of producers that we've got around Scotland is incredible. You know, whether that's textile makers, you know, designers, artists, ceramicists, as well as everyone in food and drink, I think that's fascinating. So in that same regard, yeah, I think it was actually working with the farmers and actually trying to take their best crops, giving them a fair price for it, rather than sort of squeezing them or squeezing their fields or their ground or their soil to get produce that doesn't taste great. I mean, that being said, I'm always keen to push the boat out, and we've even looked at projects about hydroponically growing citrus fruit in Scotland. We worked with two companies actually just after the end of pandemic, and I was looking to launch something in 2022, but the buggers ended up going bankrupt on me, even with a whole lot of public funding. So who knows, you might end up seeing a couple of dwarf trees grown in my office, you know, by the end of this year. Scottish citrus.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Shopify recently turned the tables on me and took me from interviewer to interviewee, knowing as they do that the most successful retailers today are those that bridge the gap between online and offline and make it a seamless experience. Shopify wanted my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, particularly in the key areas of local selling, omnichannel selling, and cross-border selling. You can read my thoughts along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting ecmp.info/Shopify and downloading the report. That's ecmp.info/Shopify.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Gregor, are you ready for the top tips?
Definitely. Yeah, hit me.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Does it have to be one, Chloe?
No, you are allowed. Everybody gives me more than one, so I gave up on aiming for that a long time ago. So yeah, give us what you got.
I think one definitely in the world of sort of e-commerce that definitely changed my thinking was that Dotcom Secrets by Russell Brunson. Don't get me wrong, I definitely think he's sort of agency focused and they're probably more selling a service, but actually the core principles about landing pages, you know, hook copies, moving people through a funnel, I find was absolutely fascinating. But one book that I've always got beside my bed, and for any founders out there, I was always struggling with sort of situational problems, whether that was with stakeholders, shareholders. Building a board last year was really hard, but I found a book called The Hard Things About Hard Things. I can't remember who writes it because I've lost the front cover of it, but if you search it, it's fantastic. I mean, the guy, he's a tech startup founder, Silicon Valley. So take a few of his points with a pinch of salt, but in terms of sort of managing really hard situations, it's been absolutely crucial to me trying to have some sort of sanity over the last few years.
It's a sign of a well-read book, isn't it, where some of it's missing. Love that. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Now, this has always been changing for me, but one thing that really sort of turbocharged our channels was just jumping on the Instagram Reels bandwagon. I realized that if I had £5 for everyone who was telling me to get on TikTok, you know, I know there's a lot of opportunity there. The same with LinkedIn, you know, other brands are just going really, really guns blazing with LinkedIn. For me, we've always been Instagram native. Yes, I know that follower count doesn't always translate into sales, but actually when we started putting, I guess, quite raw content on Reels, stuff that wasn't too polished, behind the scenes stuff. Honestly, the response was unbelievable. When you looked actually at the data insights, it was fascinating to almost unlock a new tier of new audiences. Getting those guys on the website is another challenge. But yeah, I think with the new website that we've just gone live with, at least I know that we've got as many nets out in the water as possible. So yeah, Reels. Reels has been transformative for us. It is hard work and it's a lot of effort to keep up, as we were just touching on before.
Yeah, I think all the video channels are just so much more work than the others. And if you pick one and get great at it, it's better than being average on multiple. That would be my addition.
Yeah, I definitely second that. Yeah, I know many other brand owners who are struggling managing TikToks and your Instagram and your Facebook, you know, and your LinkedIn, and a different message for everything. For us, it's more about, I guess, publishing and amplifying it, you know, so actually making sure that you've designed and built all the layouts that you need, you know, whatever thumbnails that you need, and then just testing and refining some of the copy per channel. But I'm no expert by any means.
Okay, the tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
This might be a boring one. Now, we've tried a lot of productivity tools before, but actually we've gone pretty Google native. So I'd say like Google Workspace and actually using Spaces as collaboration tools has genuinely been transformative. I travel a lot these days, and because we're a primary producer, you know, I need to have my eyes and ears on what's happening on the literal shop floor, what's happening on the front end of the business, what's happening on the digital side of the business. That's been fantastic. And I'd also say any little plugins or extensions into Google have also been really good. So actually we put in a little CRM tool called Streak, which just sits in your Gmail inbox, and it's such a simple little thing, but just tidies everything up. Zapier is the next one for us, though. I've heard great things about Zapier.
You can lose a whole week to Zapier. It's a beautiful tool.
Right. I think that'll be my march.
Yeah, personally, I'm deep in Google Workspace, but I've not used Spaces, so I'm going to have to unlock that. And I, too, am a big fan of Streak, although I don't use it for the CRM. I use it for the email templates,
right?
Which are just amazing.
Right. I might get on that, actually. My partner, Sophie, she's the real wizard with Streak, but it's tidied us up massively, especially when we've been, you know, omni-channel, multi-channel, as you probably know.
Loving those tools. You've given me several to go and get stuck into. This is good. Okay, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce business?
I mean, I'm obviously biased here because we actually have full control of our facility. I think that is, you know, step one. We touched on designing out waste from the very get-go, you know, changing your energy supplier. I think it is a crying shame that actually we're still locked here in the UK to that sort of wholesale price on gas. That doesn't make any sense, especially when we've been 100% renewably focused for 4.5 years now. Packaging's an easy win. You know, for us, it's about sort of removing a lot of the plastics from tape, outer packaging. You know, a reason we went with aluminium cans is they're lighter to ship. They lock away any UV light, so they're not going to deteriorate the quality of the liquid. We've even sort of scrutinized our fulfillment partner, and we're always on the hunt for someone who is, again, not just scrutinizing their own emissions, but actually efficient. Sustainability for me is more about efficiency as well. It's how are we saving some of this time? And yeah, couriers for us as well. Even just working with DPD, they haven't been fantastic over the last 2 years, but I think they're pulling their socks up. We tried Parcel Force, even though we lost a lot of the carbon neutrality that DPD sort of gave us. I think we're going all guns blazing back on DPD this year. I mean, I've not actually scrutinized a lot of their eco credentials, but it does make you feel a bit better. It helps you sleep at night if you know that, you know, at least the majority of their deliveries are getting delivered in electric vehicles, no?
Oh, so much so. Loving those tips, Gregor. Thank you. Now, before we say goodbye, for anyone who's got their appetite whetted and are going, oh, I need some of this pure fruit, original fruit soda in my life, where can they find you and Rapscallion Soda?
So again, predominantly online focus. So rapscallionsoda.com, or if you're a trade customer or you're looking to resell, we just set up a new subdomain called trade.rapscallionsoda.com. And again, we're just sort of streamlining that whole process. But based down south in London, we've got some fantastic cafes, a lot of fancy hotels. Up in Scotland, honestly, so many, too many to list, actually. Any sort of, from distilleries to delis to a lot of places in Edinburgh, actually. If you're ever up for the Fringe Festival or Hogmanay, yeah, grab a cold can of Rapscallion.
Brilliant. Thank you, Gregor, so much for coming on and telling us about what you're up to. Really appreciate it. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Chloe. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, what a fascinating chat with Gregor then. I think that's definitely in the inspiring box of episodes of E-commerce Master Plan, I think, but still packed with loads of really practical advice. Absolutely phenomenal the way, in order to stick to their plan, to the vision for the business, to the product they want to produce for the customers, that they've gone to the lengths of creating their own factory, essentially, to produce the product. I love the way that the limited edition products give them that kind of marketing bump, but also fit so much with what they're attempting to achieve. I could have chatted with Gregor for an awful lot longer. In fact, we did end up chatting about all kinds of random things, but both before and after hitting record. So absolutely fascinating guy. Really, really like that. And some great top tips in there as well. To get your hands on the notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to what we've mentioned, then head over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast or use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/episode number, i.e. whatever the number of the episode that you're listening to is, into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the correct page of the website. Please, when you get to the website, add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the many things I share to help you improve your business. And if you liked this episode, then why not check out our other episodes with Shopify retailers? You'll find them at ecmp.info/Shopify. Thank you for tuning in to this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
Don't forget to download Shopify's new industry report featuring my thoughts on how to achieve truly connected commerce, along with other commerce experts from Germany, France, Spain, and Italy by visiting ecmp.info/Shopify.